Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Beryl-law.com. I'm Pani Alvarez, your host from Beryl, and today our guest is Elizabeth Johnston, a labor and employment attorney at Beryl. Today we're discussing the intersection between employment law and employee voting as we cruise closer to Election Day. Welcome, Liz. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Pani. Glad to be here.
Liz, you've appeared on the show before, but can you give our listeners a little bit of background on you and the work that you do at Beryl?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I'm a labor and employment attorney at Beryl. I've been with the firm for about 2 years. My practice focuses primarily on counseling and litigation on the employment side of things, practicing in Maine state and federal court, and also, you know, advising on a range of issues, working on employee handbooks, employment agreements, and the like.
So it's fair to say that when employers are having difficulties with their employees and policy creation, that they give you a call to help work through that, right?
Absolutely. That's definitely something I could assist with.
So the topic for this episode came from a blog post that you had posted on Beryl's blog, Taking Care of HR Business. And when I read it, I thought it would make an absolutely great episode for HR Power Hour. So while I want to focus a little bit on that blog post and talk about some of the things that you presented in that post, I think that we're going to get into even lengthier conversations about different aspects of politics at work, and specifically things we need to keep in mind during the election period.
Yeah, definitely.
So Liz, everyone has their hands full just with general operations and then with COVID issues. Why should employers be focusing on the election, and does it really change any way in which they operate?
Yeah, Tawny, so it's one of those things where the big federal election happens every 4 years. So it's something that gets put on the back burner a little bit. And we hear about it in the news and just in our day-to-day lives on, you know, regular basis leading up to Election Day. But, you know, there are some considerations that come into play in the employment context that, you know, I think it's important don't get overlooked as we get closer and closer to a day where employees might need time off to vote, when we might be having, some more difficult discussions in the workplace related to politics. So I think it is important that employers know how to address some of these issues when they do come up. So that's sort of what sparked me to write the article. And thinking about those considerations, a lot of the policies that an employer will already have in place don't necessarily change when it comes to Election Day. It's more about figuring out how to apply those policies and apply the principles that we, you know, are used to during the rest of the year, you know, how those work into Election Day related issues.
Liz, is this really just an issue that larger employers are going to face, employers who have 100 or 1,000 employees? Or in your experience, is this something that could affect all employers?
It's really something that affects all employers. And, you know, it might even have a more significant impact on smaller employers as well. You know, if we're talking about issues relating to employees needing time off or leave to vote, requesting that time, that might have a more significant impact on a smaller employer who depends, you know, more specifically on specific members of their workforce. For larger employers, the issue is the same. It just might, you know, policies might be applied a little bit differently or on a larger scale.
Okay, well, so you've mentioned kind of a lot of really broad things, but let's start getting super specific. So if we're thinking about either hidden traps or places where employers could get hung up during election season, what would be one of the first things that employers should keep at top of mind when we're talking about election season or voting?
Sure. So one place I think is always important to start is, what does the law say? So if we're talking about election day and voting in general, state law and federal law is really where you want to look first. If we're talking about general leave for election or what employers are required to do or not do for an election, some states might have actual requirements and standards in place for when employees get time off to vote and what their protections might be otherwise. New England, actually, there's very limited state law and guidance on what employees are entitled to for time off to vote. But Massachusetts does have a limited statute that applies to manufacturing, mechanical, and mercantile employers. So if you are in New England, there might not be a state law that specifically applies, but it is worth looking into if you, you know, throughout the country, wherever you're located or have employees.
Liz, should I be looking at the states in which I have employees, or let's say I'm a Delaware company. That's where I'm incorporated. And I did that in order to take advantage of tax treatment and just how great the laws are in Delaware. If that's the case, do I need to look at any of the other state laws or just look at Delaware law?
You know, I would say you would want to look at the state laws, Tawny, in the states where you have employees on the ground. State laws are worded differently and applied differently to various employment situations, regardless of where the employer is located. So it's always good practice to check the state law where you have employees working and or residing as well.
I'm going to throw even more of a twist into this question, Liz. With COVID-19, I know that a lot of companies have employees who maybe recently or previously had been working in person from a specific location. But after the pandemic hit, these employees became remote employees and started working from home. In that situation, if the employee lives in another state that's different from where their primary work location had been, do I focus on that primary work location, or should I be reviewing the state in which they live to determine what my responsibilities are?
So in this case, which, you know, as you mentioned, is a really common situation nowadays, I would still want to look at the state where the employee is working. That is the state where they are currently performing work, and that's the state in which they'll be voting. So it would be important to check those states where your employees reside and are working from home if that's the case.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today we are talking to Liz Johnston, an employment attorney at Verrill. We've been discussing employment issues regarding or relating to voting, including general traps for the unwary that are related to elections and politics more generally when it's brought into the workplace. The first tip that Liz shared with us was the importance of getting to know your state laws as they relate to voting. And specifically focusing on the states in which your employees live and work as the states that you're looking for, and then also checking federal law. Liz, in addition to making sure that you have a solid grasp on the laws that are applicable to your organization based off of leave and wage and hour issues and general policies that must be followed, what's another tip that you have for employers as we creep closer and closer to election day?
Yeah, so of course, you know, checking and looking and making sure that we are complying with written policies that are already in place in the workplace, whether they're regarding voting specifically or just related to paid time off, making sure that managers and supervisors are well-versed on what's expected of employees and what's required in order to take time off if they need time to vote. I would say another area of particular concern these days would also be just making sure our employees are up to date on what their responsibilities and expectations are for managing the COVID-19 pandemic. Just making sure that people are familiar with the employer's expectations and what policies are in place to make sure that people are coming to work safe and healthy and abiding by quarantine requirements if applicable.
Liz, I think one of the things that comes to mind when we're talking about these issues is, doesn't it make sense for me as an employer to simply require all my employees to vote by absentee ballot if they can't do it outside of work? Why should I allow employees to take leave away from work and thus, you know, potentially interfere with operational capacity? When isn't that the whole purpose of the absentee process?
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Tawny. That this year especially, there are sort of, it's becoming known that there are a lot more options available to vote. And employers aren't necessarily required to allow employees that time away from their workplace or from their desk at home to go vote. However, voting is something that, you know, is important to society generally, as a matter of public policy. And so while it may not be required, it is one of those things that, you know, I would say is a good practice and best practice to be flexible in these situations and provide employees the flexibility to vote in a manner that they feel comfortable with. And if that does require time from work, then, you know, to consider that as well.
Liz, you bring up a really good point. I mean, in your experience, are employers focusing on only what the law requires, or are employers looking at voting and election cycles and politics generally more from a cultural perspective to determine maybe not what's required under state law, but who they are as an organization and what civics or social activism looks like within that organization?
Absolutely. I think that is becoming more and more the case, you know, especially when everyone's in, you know, sort of a stressful time right now. You know, being mindful of where we are culturally and as a society and, you know, what people are valuing right now and how people can have a voice and what's going on. Thinking about those things and the impact of that, meaning of that for your employees can really, you know, boost a sense of, you know, connection with an employee in their workplace where they feel valued and feel appreciated and, you know, are still able to exercise those personal liberties as well.
One of the other things that we've seen a lot more of this year is towns and cities asking for volunteers to be present at the polling locations. Previously, I think that these positions had been filled by individuals who were retired or otherwise weren't working. And I think with the pandemic, we've seen a decrease in the number of potential volunteers who fit within those categories who are able to assist in that capacity. If an employee is looking for time off in a volunteer capacity, is there anything that employers should keep in mind when dealing with these requests that are different from either requests off to vote or other requests simply for paid time off?
Yeah, one thing I would consider is whether you know, your workplace has a policy regarding time off to volunteer, and whether there would be special permissions or time available for employees who are taking time off for that purpose, or whether that qualifies to any sort of you know, incentive program that's already in place. But other than that, I would, you know, urge an employer to apply, you know, their typical rules regarding time off, you know, paid leave, as well as state required paid leave that is available or will become available in years to come.
That's a really good point. I mean, while we're going to have employers focus in on, are there any voting laws within their state that require leave to be provided to employees or paid time off to be provided to employees in order to vote. It could be that employees could use other forms of leave in order to take time either to vote or to volunteer to work at the polls. So I think that's a really good point that you mentioned, Liz. So we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsandme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their QuickPost product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobsandme to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
I'm Chris Riccobono, founder of Untuckit. We started Untuckit because we couldn't find shirts that look good untucked. That's why we created the perfect untucked shirt so guys can look sharp and feel casual. Try the original Untuckit shirt at one of our 55 Untuckit stores or at untuckit.com.
Use the promo code FALL for 20% off your first purchase.
And we're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and I'm talking to Liz Johnston, an employment attorney at Verrill. Today, we're discussing employment issues and voting, including general traps for the unwary related to the upcoming elections. Before the break, Liz was mentioning some of the key things that employers should keep at top of mind during election season generally. She focused her discussion on being aware of any state or federal laws that may be applicable to the employees who are working for you, figuring out if any specific leave needs to be provided to employees to take time off from work in order to vote, and also understanding whether or not notice was required to be provided and other wage and hour issues that could generally be applicable to employees under state or federal law. Additionally, Liz was mentioning the importance of flexibility and consistency, making sure that an employer understands that how they treat time off for voting is part of who they are as a culture, while employees may have the ability to use absentee voting in order to have their vote counted. There may be reasons or situations in which they wish to vote in person, and how will the employer respond in those situations? Liz, you mentioned it in passing in the last segment, but I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the fact that we're currently voting in the midst of a pandemic. And how does this environment change how we should be dealing with employees' concerns or requests for leaves, if at all? Maybe it doesn't affect how we deal with this election as an employer. But in your opinion, have you seen any cause for concern or any issues that employers are experiencing?
Yeah, so I think generally the fact that we are still in the midst of this pandemic doesn't necessarily change how I would go about approving requests for leave on election day. The fact that an employee wants to use a day to vote versus use a day for a personal time or a doctor's appointment or something like that, I'm not sure we should be treating that differently just because we are in the pandemic this year. That said, there are obviously concerns about what the risk of COVID-19 exposure looks like in polling places, and that's part of the reason that mail-in voting and early voting has been so prevalent this year. But I think it is important to have trust in our workforce and our employees that, you know, we have been, you know, working hard to stay healthy and keep each other healthy. But we do need to have a level of trust that our employees will use good judgment in going to the polling place and be careful not to punish or treat anyone differently because they are making that choice.
Simultaneously, I think that one of the differences that I've been seeing from employers recently is this discussion about the fact that an employee has significant time either before or after a shift in which they possibly could be voting, but that they're indicating that during that period of time, they're either caring for or watching a child whose school or caregiver is closed as a result of COVID, that the child is doing remote learning in some format, and that these alternative factors play a role in their ability to get to a polling location. Should employers be taking that into account when they are receiving these requests, or should they be sticking kind of within the bounds of whatever the statute in their jurisdiction provides?
I think this is similar to some of our discussion before the break where, you know, what the law requires is one thing, but what an employer can or should do or might decide to do for other reasons that, you know, besides legal compliance is another thing. So I think it is a really great idea for employers to be considering these things, these outside factors, such as, you know, as you mentioned, caring for a child or a family member in deciding, you know, how to be flexible and accommodating to an employee's requests in this situation.
Liz, if I'm an employer, I mean, I want all of my employees to vote. Normally, I want them to vote for the same candidate that I am voting for, whether or not I verbalize that or not. But specifically, can I require employees to give me a certain amount of notice before they take the leave? Could I say, you have to let me know 2 weeks in advance that you need voting day off? I mean, I'm a little bit concerned that a lot of employers are going to experience a situation where half of their workforce attempts to take a day off on election day in order to vote because they have fears or concerns that there are going to be long lines at polling locations.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is a situation where it is great to have a policy in place that outlines the type of notice required. But the answer is yes, you can absolutely require a 2 weeks notice or a longer period of time or a shorter period of time, depending on what your needs are. You can require that notice before an employee is able to take leave. You know, this year we are getting a little bit under the gun with the election coming up so quickly. But this might be a great time to think about what a policy could look like going forward for future elections and what type of leave would be reasonable for you. So yes, you can require advance notice of the need for leave. And best practice would be to put that into a policy and in writing, and making sure also to let employees know well in advance of what their responsibility is to provide you notice so that they can take advantage of the leave if you decide to allow it.
So, to kind of recap, we know that our first step is that we're going to look at the state laws in effect in the jurisdictions in which we operate. And then after we take a look at that, we're then going to make some determinations as to, from a cultural perspective and from a policy perspective, how we want to move forward. I know we're only a few days before the election, but could we be creating policies right now in attempting to institute them? Or are there policies that we should look to create for the next or upcoming elections that we put into either a policy handbook or that we generally share with employees?
I think there's certainly, depending on your workplace, the size of your workplace, the number of employees you have, and the types of requests you're facing, there is still time to be organized about the events of Election Day and what's going to happen as far as employees, you know, needing time or not needing time. So I think that's pretty situation dependent for this year. But even though the next presidential election might be in 4 years, there certainly is an opportunity to put policies in place that might apply to state or municipal elections as well. You know, depending on what you need before Election Day comes up, you know, you can evaluate how to handle things on that day if you don't have a policy in place already. But it definitely is a good time to get those policies ready for the next election when it comes around.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill. And today we're talking to Elizabeth Johnston, an employment attorney at Verrill. Today, we've been discussing employment issues related to voting. And specifically, Liz has been discussing the importance of being mindful of state and federal laws that are in effect in the jurisdictions in which you operate that are related to potential leave or paid time off for voting, as well as cultural things to keep in mind related to creation of policies and how we enforce those policies when employers are seeking leave. Now, I'm sure something that all of our listeners are questioning is, Liz, when we're talking about voting, we're talking about politics and political beliefs. Can employers, and I really want to focus just on private employers, can private employers limit political conversations or discussions at work?
That is the question of the day, Tani, I think. And that's a yes and no answer. So if the question is, can we limit that speech or can a private employer limit that speech? I want to talk about the yes first. So the bottom line is that there is no First Amendment right that protects speech in private workplaces. And I think, you know, it's a common misconception in a way that, you know, there's a First Amendment right to free speech, but it doesn't necessarily apply when you are at work. So that's where employers might be able to legally limit speech in the workplace. There are some things to be aware of, though. One of the, you know, most significant restrictions on an employer's ability to restrict speech is the National Labor Relations Act, which provides protections for concerted speech among employees and that's related to work issues and how it affects employees. So in situations where a political discussion might relate to an employee's working conditions or, you know, be construed to relate to things related to their jobs, that's a gray area that we want to be really careful where we're not limiting speech. In addition to that, there's also a number of state laws throughout the country that can protect political involvement of employees, political speech in some cases, and that prevent discrimination and adverse actions based on political speech and engagement in activities that are lawful outside of work. So it is really important, again, to be mindful of what jurisdiction you're in and what state law might apply.
Liz, you gave the perfect lawyer answer of maybe yes and maybe no. And I think you did a great job of explaining those yes and no situations. And you focused in on political speech. I mean, what about our dress code? Can I use my dress code to limit the attire that employees are wearing, whether or not it's a Biden-Harris t-shirt, a Make America Great Again hat? Are those limitations that are within my control?
Absolutely. You are certainly entitled to enforce your policies related to dress code, related to social media, related to solicitation in the workplace. All of those policies can remain in place. So again, keeping in mind state law regarding that, you know, that might protect that type of speech, and keeping in mind that the NLRA protects employee speech regarding certain work activities, you are free to enforce those policies nonetheless. And then the big question becomes, how do you do it and should you do it and to what degree and, you know, how to apply it?
Liz, could I permissibly, if I wanted to, limit speech that is not in conformity with my political beliefs? Or if I own an organization, if I own a business or a company and I have one political belief, can I permit certain individuals to kind of discuss or talk about politics, but not permit the other side of the argument to be presented, or people who maybe don't agree with my political stance, limit their ability to either campaign or wear clothing that may be supporting that candidate?
Here, you know, a little bit of a gray area as well, but the answer is yes, with some significant caveats and also a big question of should you do it? So political affiliation and political beliefs is not a, you know, a protected trait or a protected class of individuals, like we talk about age or race or gender and factors like that. So just because it's not a protected class, you know, it's not necessarily illegal under certain laws to discriminate against employees for having views or to limit the expression of those views in the workplace. But the thing is that it's important to be careful that there's not sort of an incidental discrimination occurring. Politics has become so intertwined in so many social issues this year and, you know, historically as well. So suppression or advancement of certain political agendas or ideals or messages could lead to an inadvertent discrimination or even harassment against people of protected classes. So I would be very, very careful. And I would probably not recommend taking a stance on certain political messages versus others in the workplace. But again, it's one of those things where there's no per se restriction against it.
Well, Liz, I tell you what, I bet I'm going to have a bunch more questions regarding that answer. But for now, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Don't you love that feeling when you've just nailed your look? When someone you barely even know comes up to you and says, "Oh, I love that outfit. Where did you get it?" That's how it feels to use Stitch Fix. They're a personal styling service. Tell them what you love, and they send great clothes for you to try on at home. Stitch Fix is on your terms and priced to fit your budget. There's no subscription required, ever. Keep what you want and send back anything you don't. So, isn't it time you started nailing your look? Get started today at stitchfix.com. Stitch Fix, personal styling for women, men, and kids. Stitch Fix, personal styling for everybody.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host, and I'm talking to Liz Johnston, an employment attorney at Verrill. Today, we've been discussing employment issues directly related to voting. We've been discussing general traps for the unwary related to elections, including being mindful of leave and wage and hour statutes that may be in effect in the jurisdictions in which the employer operates, understanding the importance of creating policies and procedures in order to permit employees to take time away from work in order to either volunteer at the polls or to take time to vote. We've also spent some time talking about how the pandemic interrelates with everything that we're discussing right now. And right before the break, I asked Liz the million-dollar question about the fact that when we talk about elections, politics often become a big discussion point within the work environment. And specifically, she was discussing and giving the perfect lawyer answer that, you know, maybe we could have the ability to restrict employer speech regarding or relating to politics, as long as we're not violating the National Labor Relations Act. Before the break, Liz specifically was talking about the importance of understanding that different political talks and discussions could lead into some concerning areas for the employer. And Liz, can you give us some examples, or maybe let me throw some things out there? I mean, if two employees are talking about immigration issues from a political standpoint, could we see any potential claims arising out of that discussion?
Absolutely. You know, depending on the content and the feeling of the discussion, and you know, the different perspectives going around, you know, we could potentially see somebody have a claim related to national origin or race discrimination or harassment. Again, you know, depending on the content of the conversation. But that would certainly be something I would be concerned about with, you know, a heated discussion regarding immigration in the workplace.
What about if it's not a discussion that's happening in the workplace, but we simply have an employee who is posting different articles or messages on Facebook? And maybe they're posting these articles or messages outside of work. They're not working. It's just they have a Facebook page and they're posting articles that are similar or set forth their belief as to certain social justice issues or questions.
Sure. So social media, you know, is tricky enough in regular times, absent the politics that are associated with the upcoming election. But as with, you know, all social media postings and communications, if an employer has a policy in place regarding social media and forbidding harassment and discrimination or bullying or threatening and those sorts of activities on social media, they're absolutely within their right to, you know, and should apply those policies the same way regarding political issues as well. In a situation where you have an employee posting political messages on social media that might be considered harassment or bullying towards another employee, or that raise an issue with potentially creating, you know, a hostile work environment if the activity carries over, the employer should definitely keep, you know, have an understanding of what's going on and take appropriate action as needed to ensure that all employees are being protected against that type of behavior.
I think one of the interesting aspects that comes into effect when we're talking about politics at work and the election generally is the importance of understanding that the other employment laws and policies and regulations that are in effect on a day-to-day basis remain in effect. They don't just disappear just because we're dealing with this one issue. Liz, how does manager training play a role in all the things that you've discussed with us so far?
Yeah, manager training is so important to implementing all sorts of policies. And, you know, the same going for maintaining our policies and applying them to election day related activities and policies that relate to politics and political speech. So, you know, I would say management training is, you know, one of those things that should be tailored to what's going on in the world and in the workplace. And when we have these issues that are becoming more prevalent and more popular, making sure that we're maintaining communication with our managers and supervisors and updating trainings as applicable to make sure that everybody's well-versed on what's going on and able to recognize appropriate and inappropriate activity and understand how to respond.
I think that's a really important point, Liz, is that we need to make sure that our whole team is on the same page throughout the course of this. And again, I mean, the pandemic plays a role here because I think a lot of employers are looking at employees as much more siloed than they previously were. And communication may only be through Zoom or only through email now, but this becomes a really important time for employers to double down and to make sure that they're appropriately communicating policies and expectations, not just to their employees, but also to managers as well. Liz, what about as a business owner, if I'm a small or even a larger organization, is it permissible for me as a business owner to notify my employees of who I'm voting for and why?
Like most of the issues we've talked about today so far, Tawny, the first place that I would look to answer that question is state law. So just looking to the jurisdiction that your company's in to make sure that there is, you know, no restrictions or caveats that would apply to releasing that information to your workforce. I would also consider, however, whether that is something that you would want to do even if you could, for the same reasons that we've talked about why it may or may not be appropriate to engage in certain political speech in the workplace. With the current political climate, releasing that information and sharing that information could potentially have an impact on the workforce more generally, even if we're not getting into issues of harassment or discrimination. Political issues can be polarizing in some cases. People tend to or can make categorizations or assumptions about people based on their political views and their political affiliations. So in some cases, the best thing to do is not take a position on that as an employer leading your company and leading your workforce in order to sort of maintain that unity among your workplace.
I think this is one of those situations as well, Liz, where we see differences in perspective of one situation being seen differently from management's perspective versus the employee's perspective. I mean, how many cases have you or I worked on in which one incident occurred and a manager says that he or she said one thing and the employee perceives something very different? Recall that we're dealing with situations of individuals who are in positions of power, and how that information is shared, could it be seen as threatening? Are you having the discussion with people while there's either privileges on the table, possibilities for bonuses, possibilities for people to receive promotions or that those type of things? As you mentioned previously, I mean, while political beliefs aren't generally under federal law protected classification, being mindful of, I think, those general perceptions and classifications that people are putting different political affiliations into is important. But with that, we're going to take another quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs and ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their QuickPost product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and I'm talking to Liz Johnston, an employment attorney also at Verrill. And today we've been discussing employment issues and voting and general traps for the unwary related to the upcoming election. Liz, before the break, you and I were discussing generally kind of the risks associated with company management or owners discussing who they're voting for and why, and why that specifically could have risks associated with the employer. Is there anything else that we should keep at top of mind when we're considering whether or not to verbalize who we're voting for when you're in a management position?
Sure. You know, I think the final point that I would reiterate, because you brought this up, Tani, before the break, but it's regarding perception. And perception really is everything when it comes to these types of issues. I know in every training that I do on discrimination and harassment, we talk about perception and how important that is, and keeping in mind when we're talking about whether something's contributing to a hostile work environment or becoming a harassment issue. So really keeping in mind that people have a full, you know, their own set of experiences that they're bringing with them into the workplace. And a comment by a manager, whether political or not, can trigger certain feelings or evoke certain emotions or evoke feelings that you know, might not be intended by the manager. The manager could have completely, you know, good intentions with it, but it's always important to keep in mind that things aren't always received as intended. And the employee's perception is really what governs in those situations.
That's a really good point, Liz. And thank you for making a point to point that out. Because I do think it's important that employers keep that at top of mind throughout the course of all of these discussions. And with that, I would love to end our conversation with a hypothetical scenario and get your thoughts on something that I think we're going to be seeing a lot of in the weeks following the election. Liz, are you ready?
I'm ready.
So Liz, let's say hypothetically that we have an employee who is working from home, and they're working from home because they've told their employer that they either have a health condition or they're high risk and they are not leaving their home at all. They need to work remotely, and that from a safety and health perspective, they don't leave that house for anything. They have meals and groceries that are delivered. And since March, they aren't leaving home unless it's for a doctor's appointment. If we see on social media pictures of this person either standing in line at a polling place or generally advertising the fact that they went out and voted, could we retract that employee's work from home grant? And specifically, let's say the reason we want to do it is because the employee is not a high performer. They're having struggles with the remote work, and we don't believe that they're working that full 8 hours a day when they're working from home.
Oh, that's a tricky one for sure. You know, it's tricky because in a lot of these situations, as an employer, you know, there are a lot, maybe a lot of accommodations that are being made, and to feel like someone might not be being honest or might be taking advantage of a situation can definitely be frustrating. But I would caution anyone who finds themselves in this situation not to jump to conclusions too early. I think the best thing to do in this situation would be to get in touch with the employee and sit down and have a conversation to begin with. You know, I think it's important to fully investigate sort of what happened, the reason that it happened, and get the employee's point of view on this. Once that's done and you have a better understanding of the situation, you know, then we talk about, you know, considering whether, you know, a remote work option still makes sense or whether any adjustment is needed to the accommodations that are being made or the leave that's being provided, whether that's still warranted or needed. But again, it's an individual fact-specific situation. So it's important to make sure we're getting all the facts first. The performance issue is definitely a wrench thrown in the mix. Being on a protected leave or having accommodations made for you for whatever reason doesn't necessarily shield an employee, you know, 100% from, you know, an action being taken against them or a warning or a termination regarding legitimate performance issues. But it's definitely important to keep in mind those, you know, whether the employee is on any protected leave or of a protected status when we're making that determination.
Liz, that is so helpful, I think, to a lot of our listeners. Thank you for that really thorough answer and help for what I think is going to be an issue that a lot of employers are faced with in mid-November. And with that, Liz, thank you so much just for being on the show. We really appreciate all your insight in this really tricky situation and circumstances regarding politics in the workplace and elections more generally.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Stay tuned for the HR Tip of the Week.
And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez from Verrill. Let's get back to the basics. When was the last time that you reviewed job descriptions? Your job descriptions include the following information, a job title, and whom the position reports to. The job classification itself. Is it full or part-time, exempt or non-exempt from overtime pay requirements? A temporary contract or regular position? What are the job duties or responsibilities, both with regards to operational concerns and the physical aspects of it? What qualifications are necessary, including education level, professional or required licenses or certifications? Is there any prior work experience in a particular field or in a certain type of position? Are there physical requirements to the position, including sitting, standing, and other similar requirements? Keep all of these things in mind, or to further discuss the do's and don'ts of effective job descriptions, contact a member of Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.